Carrie, what I'd like to do is just to clarify this with our listeners. Gordon used to talk about stuff like alien invasions, about even a fake alien invasion scenario, and how that the elite may have used this type of technology, not only to fake or to do what Dr. Carol Rosen talked about, but also to get off planet while they still had an opportunity before these particular Earth changes occurred. And why I brought up that point was the fact to help people understand Gordon, you have to allow them to be able to see from the perspective, Gordon's mind's eye, his perspective on things. And that's why I wanted to discuss the Planet X hypothesis and the other things that we've talked about, because Gordon used to talk about this quite often.
Well, I agree with that. And this is a tribute to Gordon, so we don't want to get too far off topic either. But the person who wrote the question in the chat was asking, was actually talking about... referring to Sean David Morton's statement that Planet X could be hiding an armada of a fleet of ships on the way here, sort of an ET or alien invasion scenario, if you will. And I have to say that sort of sounds very blue beamish to me on the one hand. But on the other hand, Sean and I shared a knowledge and interaction with the writer of the Wingmakers saga, which talks about a race of robots that could very well be on the way here. I know that we are dealing with other things as well. Obviously, we're dealing with an invasion that's already happened, and that's a very important caveat to what Sean is saying. The other thing is that if it is hiding, in other words, if they're making a big deal out of Planet X to hide an armada on the way here, that's kind of a strange way to do it. I do know that some of the planetoids that have been on the way in have actually come and gone. The recent asteroids that were, from what I understand, planetoids actually, could have contained, in other words, beings inside them. They use these things as craft, and they can actually manipulate them and propel them, and thereby, because it's kind of like a ship, if you can envision that, then they can have beings inside, and they could, you know, they could be dropping beings off, and we wouldn't even know it. This is where people criticize Hoagland, but there may be truth behind a lot of the so-called madness or things that don't seem to have happened yet, and yet we are actually looking at a planet that is inundated by various races that are here with agendas of their own, and that may, some of which are hostile. And in fact, this situation off in the Pacific right now, regardless of whether you believe that's really going on, certainly did go on and has gone on, hidden from view of the general public. There are wars, various wars going on behind our sort of above in our skies, above the chemtrails, and in our oceans, and UFOs do get shot down by our government and maybe by other races in using their own ships and so on. So it's a complex story, and that's my answer to the question that was put into the chat. Bill, do you want to give that a stab?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. For me, the idea of any incoming planetary object concealing an armada of UFOs is ludicrous, I have to say. I mean, that's the kind of thing you put in a Hollywood movie. If the ETs are doing that, then they've got very low technology. They're moving very, very slowly, and they clearly don't have a lot of room for choice. And that's those aren't the ETs which I understand are out there. They can appear, they can disappear, they can travel halfway across the universe simply by using wormhole technology. They can do absolutely anything they want to. And this is one of the problems, just to jump halfway sideways here into what Zechariah Sitchin was always saying about the Anunnaki and Nibiru. The idea that the Anunnaki, who are a space-faring, high-technology race, capable of landing on this planet any time they wanted to, besides engaging in any kind of genetic and cultural manipulation that they wish to, hanging on to an icy planetoid, waiting patiently for thousands of years until it came in from the Oort cloud. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, they can do anything they want to. They have high technology. We heard ourselves from Henry Deacon how you can get in an elevator called a jump room. You press a sequence of codes on a control panel.
Hello?
And you're on Mars. Yeah.
Bill, hold 1 second. Yes, caller? Hello? Okay, I'm sorry about this. I guess they hung up. Holy cow, what happened? We got disconnected. You guys hear me in there? I do apologize for that. I think we got disconnected from the caller.
Anytime you feel someone important is trying to get in there. In the meantime, just to round off what I was saying, any high technology race of ETs worth their salt can do absolutely anything they want to at any time, and they're certainly not dependent upon planetary orbital physics to hide behind. They can appear, they can disappear, they can manifest, they can warp space and time, they can do anything they like. And so I suspect that that was something that Sean David Morton was saying pretty much tongue-in-cheek, just as what Hollywood would appreciate is a good movie theme. And that was always the problem with things like NNN, and I have to say that I think Hoagland got himself into some intellectually pretty deep water when he was when he was hypothesizing without any grounds whatsoever. But they are out. I mean, just to support what Kerry was saying in a positive way, there are hostile ETs. That is, for me personally, that is a given. I'm sure that there are all kinds of games going on out there. Some might call them battles. I think that Planet Earth is a much prized piece of real estate, and I suspect that the life forms on Planet Earth are much prized for other purposes as well, and the human race may be much prized as well, and may even be considered that it is owned. There may be competing states for who feels that they are in charge here. And we probably only have about 5% of a very, very, very large picture. Regarding Project Bluebeam, for lack of a better word, I don't know if it was ever actually called that, something that Gordon, I think, would certainly agree with, and this is to bring this story arc back to Gordon's own interests. We heard from Henry Deacon when we were talking about the possibility of a fake alien invasion being manifested using some kind of a laser light show out there, some kind of a high-tech holographic imagery out there in the skies. Henry just said, listen, you have no idea how many craft the secret government have. They could fill the skies with these things, and everyone would think they were alien craft. You wouldn't even need a laser show. They're physical objects, and they've got this whole armada themselves that they can fake anything that they like with. One of the stories that we heard from Gordon Mavell, we didn't hear this personally. We talked to him about it a little bit, but he went live on this when he was talking with George Knapp on Coast to Coast. I think it was in January 2010. He said that that the nephew of a good friend of his, who is a very experienced hiker, was out in the Utah desert, 25 miles away from the nearest road, in the middle of nowhere. And Gordon was very graphic in the way that he described this. He says you couldn't even get a horse there. There are big boulders. There are rattlesnakes under every rock. It's nowhere where anyone would ever want to go. And this guy was out there on his own, this young hiker. And he said that when he was there, just sitting in the middle of nowhere on his own, he said that this huge black triangle came down, hovered above the ground, above the desert floor, and then he said that the desert floor opened up like the deck of an aircraft carrier, because this hiker didn't know it at the time until the desert floor opened up just right next to him, and there he was. There was clearly an underground base which opened up and received this huge craft. And then this huge craft just sank slowly down into the ground and then the desert floor closed up again. And
that's right.
In conversation with George Knapp soon afterwards, Gordon said that he made inquiries among some of the people who he knew, and Gordon certainly was well connected in that respect. I mean, there's no doubt in my own mind that Gordon was reporting the exact truth as he knew it. He said he made a few inquiries, and he said that there were 8 starships, which he called them starships. There are 8 arrow-shaped craft. They measured 600 feet by 100 feet. They're wedge-shaped arrows, and he said that this basically is the Solar Warden fleet that Henry Deacon had confirmed to us himself. And they're operating out of Utah. And
yes.
Just to
but don't forget, Bill, that he told us that same story on the TV show, but they edited it out, if you recall.
Yes, you're absolutely right. They didn't want that in there. Yes, that's right.
Yes, right.
That was a bit too close to home. But just to bring this back, it's a shame that Jim isn't with us anymore. I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever that Gordon was connected on the inside with sources of information that provided him with reliable material. And just like anybody who's in that interface position, as you have been many times and I have been quite a few times, you don't reveal your sources. You have to be very discreet with what you say, and at the same time, you're trying to get the information out in the drip feed. And as we know, there's this other side to this whole coin, that the controllers want this information out as long as it cannot be proved. They want to change the thinking of those who are aware enough to pick up what's happening bit by bit, but not too fast. Wouldn't you agree with that, Kurt?
Yes, I would. I mean, I would say that they're using us just as they're using other people. Paul Richard Price is certainly part of this group, and others that have been on this call with us earlier this morning. We are all part of a disclosure movement, if you will, and we are a bridge. I've said it before, and I think even Rich Dolan would agree that we are a bridge to the rogue space program, to the secret government, and we are the only bridge they have, and therefore, in many ways, we are absolutely vital. Now, what they let us let out, and what they sort of try to commandeer and take out of our hands and disinfo after we put it out, et cetera, or even try to get to us before, how much they try to take us off the line, misdirect us, et cetera, is a fascinating sort of dance in and of itself for people who are watching, and with an astute eye, I'm sure they're kind of watching those steps as we go. But no doubt about it, they need disclosure. They need that gap to be slowly closed to some degree, because otherwise they are going to be left with a primitive human population that is so far behind them when they do decide to disclose that they simply won't be able to communicate. It will absolutely be, people will be going crazy, and literally and figuratively. I think they already are. I think people in the mainstream, I just had a conversation with a journalist who calls himself an investigative journalist in the financial sector, and he literally told me that the only thing that he saw happening, and this is somebody very astute, very relatively mainstream and gets, published, highly published and so on and so forth, and he says, is self-interest. That's all that's running the financial system, are a bunch of rather stupid guys trying to make a lot of money. That was his assessment. Just blew my mind. He didn't want to use the word conspiracy. He would never use that word because, quote unquote, he didn't want to be called crazy. And this is what we're dealing with out there. And this is somebody who is very astute in the financial sector, who is watching this game close up, and I mean very close up, and still has no clue whatsoever and doesn't even want to acknowledge that there's something else going on, that there's an agenda out there. So this is what we're dealing with.
Would say to that person who put them in touch with Catherine Austin Fitz, and then they certainly put him right.
Yeah, well, there is a place to go. Maybe someone he would respect, at least speaks his own language rather than myself. But at any rate, I think that was a memorable phone call for him dealing with me. But at any rate, I want to say one thing about the planetoid issue, because I did talk to a whistleblower about this in depth. It's an interesting concept. In other words, we know that various ET races have very sophisticated craft. They can come and go, as you said, and they have incredible large craft. Some are probably close to the size of small moons, etc. But it is also true that they do commandeer moons and other planetoids, and then they run them through solar systems, etc. I think maybe in part because as Phobos is a satellite of Mars, and is occupied and has been occupied, as I have from very good authority, and the moon itself being one of those types of satellites, these things are occupied. They do use them when they have very large populations, for one thing, and they might be considered the slow-moving craft, and they also can make them move faster than what would be commonly considered what a planetoid or a planet would move at. So it depends what size you're talking about. But there's no doubt, maybe you would call it, I don't know, like a cargo vessel type of thing, where in some cases they will actually use them. Now, I think they also use them to inhabit, for example, when their races are no longer able to inhabit whatever planet they destroyed on their way here or on their way through various solar systems. So you're talking about what may be their home, in a sense, but they can actually power it and get it to move. And it is said this is in part how the moon became a satellite of the Earth, and possibly how other moons have gotten to where they are, not through any natural means.
That's absolutely not impossible. Let's just close it down that way. David Icke said that the moon is hollow. I think that is quite plausible. And once again, going back to Henry Deacon, an enormous source of information for us, he actually said that the Earth's moon was engineered into place quite a long time ago. He told us that. We just had a question on the chat. Did Borden himself have extraterrestrial contact personally? If he did, I never knew about it. Terry, was that anything that these folks do that on or off record?
I think he was trying to. I don't know whether he did in the end. If you remember the woman that he was a sort of a sensitive who had a lot of contact herself, I believe he was kind of using her and possibly there were others to communicate with some groups. So I think he was very, very interested in doing that. He, on our, you know, on our interview, he insisted that he was, I think he called it, he was from Minnesota or one of those states, and said he needs to. Well, yeah, there's a saying that something like, I have to see it before I believe it type of thing.
Show me state next. oh, gosh.
That's Missouri.
Yeah,
Missouri,
he used to say it all the time.
Terry and Bill, may I interrupt something here right now while we're still live? I think I know who tried to call in. And it was Spirit Novell, is what I think, his daughter. And if Spirit wants to call back in, feel free to do so. We want to hear from her.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah, we would like to hear from Spirit. I mean, hey, my heart goes out to you, to Sir and to Miracle right now. You guys, I know, are going through a whole lot. And your thoughts are in our prayers and thoughts right now, the passing of your father. Like I said, he was a flamboyant man, but he was tough as nails. You know, that's Gordon Novell. And once he got his feet into something, he never let it go, especially with the R of the R of technology. And what I think we should really focus on,
I want to say something. I want to say that I did talk to Gordon about his family, and that he loved his family very much. He literally would lay down his life for them. I don't know whether they know that. I just want to say that he had told me this, and he did convey a huge amount of some regrets and some just a huge amount of feeling towards his children. And I just want them to know that. I know that sometimes his relationship with them was not as easy as perhaps it could be, but I do know that he conveyed to me, how very proud he was of his children, and that was very, very evident.
Oh, yeah, well, and Sarah's son later became a corporate lawyer out of Thailand, and his daughter is into acting, I do believe, now in the L.A. area, as Sarah is. Miracle, I think, is the only married one, or at least, I don't know if Spirit got married or Sir did, but I know Miracle did, and had, I think, his grandchildren, and the kids are good kids. I mean, they're good people. And, you know, if anything could happen, I hope that the legacy that Gordon leaves is for his progeny, that, you know, he at least tried, and he tried to get things to go through, even though he wasn't able to. But I want us to remember Gordon, not for the negative, but mainly for the positive, that he tried his best to open doors that are still being closed right now, and to release technology that would help save mankind. Unfortunately, right now, with his passing, it might end up causing that door to be closed, if not permanently, but for a much longer time than what was needed. And Carrie and Bill, you're the only two left in the chat right now. We have only 2 minutes left to go until the show ends. Do you have any final closing thoughts?
Gordon Avell was a fascinating man, a very brilliant man, and a trailblazer. He had the kind of personality to be that way, and he really stuck it through to the end. I know he would still be want to be here fighting right this moment. And he was also a deeply spiritual person. I know we haven't said that, but I do want to say that here. And I, for one, am very happy to have known him.
Yes, I want to echo that. For me, it was a privilege to have spent a little bit of time with him. He was a great deal of fun. He was a brilliant man. He was a visionary.